This is a Eastern Lariat special, and a special on a very difficult topic today. Today, this morning, German time, I learned of the passing of Hayabusa Eiji Isaki in the age of 47 years. He died out of the blue. So to say, yesterday he was found dead in his apartment in Tokyo when he was scheduled to do a live performance, sing some songs that he wrote in recent years. And the cause of death is a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is kind of a stroke, I guess. I'm joined by Brett, who runs the FMW US site. Brett, how are you today?
In shock.
In shock, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I did get you online because you are always, when I have some questions about old FMW, new FMW, WMF, any kind of promotions that the former FMW guys run these days, you are always the man to ask these questions. So, Hayabusa, he died in the age of 47, and we, of course, most people know about his accident when he did the Lion Salt or the Asai Moonsault and landed right on his neck in 2001. I think a lot of people saw that video back in the early days of YouTube. You had a special bond with FMW and the wrestlers. I think you were in Japan quite a few times. And what is your connection to FMW and Hayabusa in particular?
Well, just getting started, liking, you know, wrestling on the internet in the 90s and everything. There was really only four promotions really back then. It was All Japan, New Japan, FMW, and Michinoku Pro. And FMW, I kind of felt like had the best personalities, the best characters at the time. The whole deathmatch thing, especially, you know, with ECW going on, being really popular in the 90s, FMW kind of, you know, looking into, oh, them taking it a step further with the explosion matches and the barbed wire. Lots of emotion also. That was a big thing that brought me into FMW. You know, Onita crying, Hayabusa crying, Megumi Kudo's retirement where, you know, she's going through exploding barbed wire and she can barely walk and she's crying, and just that real emotion. And that's what draws me into wrestling, is just the raw emotion. And I thought FMW really showed that, especially for, you know, the time.
And with Hayabusa, they had a incredibly gifted performer who not only invented some of the best high flying moves, I think you can say that I still use today, but who also was a great personality and who was an enormous draw in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, he created the Phoenix Splash. He popularized the 450 Splash. Scorpio actually created it, and he took it from him in Mexico. But Hayabusa or Ozaki, you know, he started as a young boy in FMW for the first couple years, and then Onita sent him to Mexico to learn. That's what a lot of the Japanese wrestlers do. He went to Mexico and he realized, well, everyone in Mexico has masks. So that's actually how he created the Hayabusa character with the mask and everything. And if you see, there's pictures of him with low rent mask at the beginning. He's, you know, there, the quality definitely improved as time went by. But while he was there, he learned all the Lucha Libre moves. He learned, that kind of style, and then just, like I said, just kind of innovated, several moves. And I mean, even mat-based moves, he created the Falcon Arrow, you know, which is used, you know, today. No one was using that even, and that's just a, you know, a regular mat-based move, but no one was even using that in the 90s.
Yeah, and you said his his star really rose when he was in the 1994 Super J Cup. He faced Jushin Liger in that tournament. What memories do you have of that match?
Oh, that was one of my first matches I saw of him. I know that was I've gone to Japan a couple times and I've gone to his shows, and that was actually, his concerts, and after his concerts, he'd I get to talk to him and everything. And so that was one of the things I asked him about, and he was telling me how nervous he was, that was a big deal at the time, especially, him just still being, a young boy at the time, and then just having gotten started in Mexico, and then they call him in, and they're like, FNW calls him, and they're like, you need to come back to Japan, wrestle the J Cup against Liger, and then after that, he just went straight back to Mexico. He, that was like his only day in Japan for a year or so, he told me, and so, but just even that match, he got to show his style right away, because that was the first time in Japan that people were seeing him performing these high flying moves like the shooting star press, because he hadn't really popularized that yet or had done those moves that much while as Ozaki and FMW. So the J Cup was a really big performance for him, and he really liked that match. It was a really big deal. It kind of put him on the map right away.
Yeah, that was really a great opportunity for a young guy like him to be put on the map like this. And as we were talking, 1994, one year later, he was the young guy who opposed Atsushi Onita in his retirement match at the time. It was a main event of the 6th anniversary show of FMW in the big Kawasaki Stadium in front of, I think, 55 to 59,000 people.
Yeah,
58,000 people. An incredible number of people in a building for a promotion that I think at the time didn't have television.
No, it didn't. It was just commercial videos. And actually, a funny story about that is that Onita took all the purse money for that show. He took everything. So, FMW had just held this big show drawing 58,000 fans, but they didn't have much money, as a profit afterwards, because Onita just took all the money.
Classic Onita, I guess. But this show, people really, I think from this show on, really took him seriously as a high level performer. Can you just take us through the following years of his career up until his tragic accident in his match on October 22nd, 2001 with Mammoth Sasaki?
Yeah. So the thing with Hayabusa. Ricky Fuji actually told me this, that he wanted to be the star, that was his goal, to be the star. And he never really thought he was going to be with Onita on top. But with Onita retiring, and Tarzan Goto was actually going to be the star of FMW, that was the original plan, that Onita takes on Tarzan Goto, and then Onita had to win, and Goto saw this as, this isn't going to work for me. I've been seen as the number two guy the whole time in FMW, and now I'm going to lose to Onita again in the big retirement show, and then I'm going to be expected to run the company. And so that's actually why he pretty much bailed on the company about a week, and a little less than a week before the show. And so, because that was originally, Hayabusa was scheduled to come back to Japan and take on Mike Awesome on that show. But so with Goto gone, they kind of just realized, okay, we need a new star. And they saw Hayabusa as that star. And so he kind of paid his dues all in that one match. And because, he got, I forget the number, but he got so many stitches from that match. He, going through the explosions, there's a lot of pictures of him post right after that show, and you can see all the stitches and everything. And then, he performed a moonsault off the top of the cage, which, at the time had never been done. So, right there, and the crowd, even afterwards, while he was getting stretchered out, was chanting, Ezaki, Ezaki. you know, even during the Onita show, because he earned their respect that day. And so then he was put on top, you know, with having lost to Onita, you know, and just, it was a brand new FMW. It kind of, it was a, just a restart. They had to start all over, Hayabusa as the new star, and then, you know, they focused more on match quality, which, you know, they never really did with Onita as charge. So with Hayabusa, with Oya, with the Gladiator, Mike Awesome, you know, they really focused on, you know, the quality of matches and everything. And a lot of internet fans, a lot of FMW fans, and I mean, and Ricky Fuji even told me, you know, that was, they felt like that was the best time of FMW, right after Onita, focusing on match quality. It was more about a younger, you know, it was mid-20-year-old men, you know, in their prime, having great matches and everything. And like I said, they kind of, and you know, they focused on the quality and kind of took away from the death matches as much. But you know, they still held death match shows for the big, for the big shows like Kawasaki Stadium in '96. They had Hayabusa and Masato Tanaka against Terry Funk and Mr. Pogo in a exploding ring match, and that showed you know, and this is kind of, like I said, it was kind of, the promotion was a brand new promotion essentially after Onita retired, and they they, you know, struggled with the gate and everything, but to be able to hold at Kawasaki Stadium again with no Onita or anything like that, they were able to draw over 33,000 fans for that show, which was a big time success.
No, that's really, really an amazing. That's WrestleMania kind of numbers, and just imagine getting these kind of gates without regular television and just based on mouth to mouth propaganda and based on commercial tapes. Magazines, of course.
Yeah, magazines were a big thing back in the mid-90s or so for Japan. You know, there were two regular magazines coming out weekly, and all these pictures and everything. And that's what really set FMW apart, really stood out, because, you know, especially with the Onita times, like, okay, the matches, the qualities weren't that good. But if you were just looking at the magazines, you were just seeing, you know, look at these pictures. These pictures are more impressive than, you know, Misawa and Kawada and Kobashi, you know, matches. And these magazines are at every, you know, at every store pretty much. You walk in, you know, there's Japanese wrestling magazines there. And so even if, you know, you weren't the biggest Japanese wrestling fan or anything like that, or you didn't watch any of the shows, you still saw these magazines, and, you know, the FMW pictures stood out more than the New Japan pictures, even if the New Japan and All Japan picture or shows had better quality. But yeah, and so anyway, as far as just FMW, you know, they held the Kawasaki Stadium show. Hayabusa again, you know, got cut up really bad, going through the explosions, going through the barbed wire. You know, I mean, I think he had about 100 stitches following that match.
Jesus.
With Terry Funk and Mr. Pogo. Just getting dropped on his stomach and on the exploding barbed wire. You know, just everything like that. Just, you know, really putting his body through everything. He took off about 3 months or so following that show to recover. And, you know, and then he worked program with a kind of a Michinoku program there for a little while. He was having matches with Taka Michinoku. He had a match with the great Sasuke, which he told me actually they were both kind of disappointed in, because the injuries were kind of already tallying up for both of them, so they didn't have the match that they had really hoped for. Following that, then they kind of, Mr. Gonosuke came back. Gonosuke left with Tarzan Goto, because Tarzan Goto trained Hayabusa and Gonosuke, and Goto left, you know, following the Onita before the Onita retirement show, and took Gonosuke with them to all IWA Japan, and that kind of just fell apart. So Gonosuke came back, and they worked a program, Hayabusa and Gonosuke, for about 2 years. As kind of a best friends growing up, because Hayabusa and Gonosuke trained together. They started in the dojo together the same day. They came in, 50 people applied for the FMW dojo, you know, to be a wrestler there, and only Hayabusa and Gonosuke made it.
It's really interesting to see on your homepage, as I said, fmwwrestling.us, you have a kind of a history of the FMW dojo. You can see some of the guys who went to the FMW dojo, and as you said, a lot of people applied to the dojo because the promotion was so incredibly popular. through magazines and commercial tapes. A lot of people didn't really make it in the FMW dojo, but these two did. And this rivalry, how did that progress?
Well, it started off with Hayabusa not wanting to fight Gonosuke, because they were childhood friends. And Gonosuke the heel, he had turned his back on FMW by leaving FMW in 95. He came back and he joined the Funk Masters of Wrestling, which was Terry Funk and Victor Quinones's group of foreigners. And so they had a match at a Yokohama Arena on April 29th, 1997, after Hayabusa finally agreed to have the match, and it would be a hair versus mask match. And actually, so Hayabusa won that match, and he told Gonosuke, you know, you don't have to cut your hair if you just join me. You know, just let's forget that, that you went heel. Let's forget that you were, against FMW. Just join me, and we can, form Team FMW. You don't have to cut your hair or anything. And Gonosuke turned his back again on Hayabusa and attacked him. And that, like I said, that just kind of set up about 2 years worth of matches right there, where Hayabusa faced Gonosuke first as a member of the Funk Masters of Wrestling, then Gonosuke joined Onita's heel Zen group, and Onita didn't like being a heel there, so that group didn't last very long. And because he was like, I created FMW, why am I a heel? But but they wanted to focus on Hayabusa as the top babyface. That was a whole other issue also with Onita coming back. Hayabusa he never said this, but Ricky Fuji told me, and just, you could just tell, he didn't like kind of taking a back seat. He was put in charge. Okay, you're the number one guy. And then Onita comes back and Onita's going, nope, I'm number one, you're number two. So, you can't say anything because Onita created FMW. So he kind of just had to take a back seat to that. He worked some All Japan. He worked the Real World Tag Team Tournament in 97.
That's right.
With Shinzaki. That's another thing. Hayabusa was the first wrestler in All Japan that worked for another promotion to work an All Japan show.
Oh.
Yeah, in 97. And he did, he worked several Budokan shows. Giant Baba loved Hayabusa. Hayabusa tagged with Giant Baba in a six-man tag at the Tokyo Dome in 98. Just Giant Baba loved him so much, and that was kind of why Baba let that... No New Japan wrestlers were working All Japan at that time or anything like that, obviously. But he just loved Hayabusa, and so there was kind of an FMW All Japan agreement there in 98, 99 or so.
And for this show, you just mentioned the Tokyo Dome show. It was the 25th anniversary show for All Japan in the Tokyo Dome again in front of a massive crowd of 85,000 people in a six-man tag with the founder of All Japan Pro Wrestling. Again, a great crowd number. And how did that lead to... obviously we have 1998, and from that point on, I think FMW wasn't as popular anymore as it was before.
Well, what happened was, FMW was, just due to the situation, having all these death matches, you can only go so far. They held the Kawasaki Stadium show with Onita was back, and they drew a good number, but it was kind of getting to the point where they spent a lot of money to get that good number, though. They kind of had to realize we can't just keep going with this deathmatch wrestling.
You can only go so far, you're right.
Yeah, you can only go so far. They had an exploding ring times two where they put double the explosions, they just couldn't go so far. They had Big Japan at the time, they're holding all these death matches at this time. I think that kind of gets forgotten that, Big Japan, even though it wasn't as popular as it is today, they, kind of took over the deathmatch wrestling at that time with the Piranhas and the Crocodiles, Matsunaga and Pogo, running those matches. So they kind of held, they kind of took away the deathmatch audience. And then
kind of a different popularity than it is today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a completely different, you know, just complete deathmatch. I know, you know, they do the light tubes today, but, you know, in the mid-90s, late-90s, you know, that was, you know, it was just anything goes with Big Japan. And FMW, you know, they had talented guys that, you know, that didn't need to do those deathmatches. They could hold good matches and everything. And so what they did was they came up with a deal with DirecTV that was just getting started in Japan. That offered them $3 million to run their shows. And they would, you know, DirecTV would provide, you know, all the lights and everything, you know, new TV cameras, all that stuff. So it was a really good deal for FMW at the time. The problem was that DirecTV wanted kind of more of an entertainment-based wrestling with, you know, with WWF getting really popular at the time.
Mm.
And they hired Koto Fuyuki as the booker, and I mean, a lot of people don't like Fuyuki's booking style, which I understand, but, you know, at the very least, he had sensical, logical feuds and matchups, like, but I know the internet and, you know, and just, and FMW fans at the time, it wasn't just, you know, the internet itself, but a lot of fans did not like, you know, the kind of the entertainment, the WWF style, that sports entertainment style that FMW was producing. I personally like that era still. I know it wasn't as popular, and I know it wasn't, it's not thought of as good, but, you know, and a lot of the wrestlers, you know, themselves don't like that, didn't like that era either. So it wasn't just, you know, the fans or anything, but they kind of needed to, they had to listen to DirecTV because they were paying the bill. Hayabusa, you know, They got rid of Onita, so Hayabusa was kind of happy because he got to be the star again, and they kind of focused on that. And yeah, it was pretty much a completely different audience. You know, all the fans that were there for Onita, you know, in the mid '90s, they changed. You know, they left, but they did bring in a whole new audience. But as the years went by, that whole new audience kind of started to wane. Japanese wrestling started to wane. It just wasn't as, you know. As we get into 2000, 2001, Japanese wrestling itself is just was not as popular as it was in the 90s. You know, New Japan took the hit. All Japan took the hit. And that's kind of when they started creating new promotions. You know, the All Japan, Misawa and the All Japan guys split and, you know, formed NOAH. You know, Toriumon at the time, you know, it started to, you know, it was created. And Osaka Pro, you know, all these new promotions are starting to create. And, you know, all these promotions are being created, and wrestling in Japan itself is getting, you know, the popularity is getting a hit, is getting lower and lower. And I actually have a Shoshi Arai, he was the FMW owner towards the end. I actually got his book translated there at the end. He wrote a whole book about everything towards the end. And he was just in such financial dire, and just going to the mafia or the Yakuza at the time, and just he wasn't even focused on, you know, booking anymore. It was all on Fuyuki at that time, and he was just, you know, so they didn't even really have a president. They had, you know, Fuyuki was pretty much all in charge, while Arai was just making all these deals, trying to make as much money as can. He was being given all this money by the Yakuza, knowing he wasn't going to be able to, you know, be able to pay him back.
Yeah, that's another very tragic story. Shoji Arai, he committed suicide in May of 2002 in the age of 36, I guess, stemming from these kind of deals he made.
Yeah, he pretty much, like I said, he kept going to these loan sharks that they'll pay, you know, we'll give you, you know, $5,000, you know, or you know, if but you got to pay us $7,500, you know, back. And just things like that, and he would just take the $5,000, thinking, "Well, tomorrow, I'll worry about that in the future. Yeah. You know, I need that money now to keep FMW going." And a big hit for FMW at the time also was Hayabusa was out for 6 months. That kind of gets forgotten. He was out for 6 months due to a double arm reconstruction to his elbows because of doing all the high flying moves. For all these years, he needed to take off for 6 months.
His first match back was a exploding 15,000 volt Thunderbolt Octagon Cage Bomb Death Match.
Yeah, with the great Sasuke versus Mr. Ganosuke and
Tetsuhiro Kuroda.
Tetsuhiro Kuroda, yeah. And I kind of lost track there, but yeah, Hayabusa and Ganosuke, they actually made up, going back, there was an angle where they, you know, Hayabusa became H. He didn't want to do the high-flying moves anymore. He wanted to do more of the ground base. So they came up with a thing where he took the mask off, but they felt like he still needed a main event persona, and so they came up with H, where he was more focused on his hair color and, you know, and kind of his attire. That did not get over very well. I especially at the beginning wearing Daisy Dukes. That was, especially at the time, the internet did not like that at all. I actually asked Hayabusa, which gimmick did he like better, Hayabusa or H? And he actually told me H. Because he got to focus more on the ground base. He liked, you know, having the ground base matches. He came up with more of a mat-based arsenal, and it really kind of evened him out, you know, instead, because at the time he was kind of known as the spot fest kind of guy, like a Sabu, just spot after spot after spot. But he really learned psychology. He really got to, you know, like I said, use mat-based moves and everything as H. But the office made him go back to Hayabusa after about 11 months or so, because the fans wanted Hayabusa back. They liked the gimmick better than Hayabusa, better than H. So he came back as Hayabusa full time there. And then, like I said, him and Ganosuke had a match at the Yokohama Arena in 99, where they made up and became friends. And then about 6 months later, Ganosuke turned on him again, because they realized Ganosuke was a better heel. But so that was kind of what transpired the rest of FMW, was just more of just Hayabusa feuding with Fuyuki, feuding with Ganosuke, feuding with Kuroda. And then, like I said, he took 6 months off and came back at Kawasaki Stadium in May in 2001. And he worked for about five more months in October 2001. Arai was so busy worrying about the money, he booked this horrible tour in October 2001, where they're running a show in like Nagasaki. Then the next show, they're running a show, you know, the next day, it's they're running a show 6 hours away. Then the next show, they're holding they're running another show near Nagasaki again. So, like, wait, that it made no sense. Like, they're driving, you know, they're on a bus 6 to 7 hours, and then going back to where they could have been, and, you know, and just things like that. So the crew was completely tired. And then they, on the last show of the tour, Hayabusa, on October 22nd, 2001, Hayabusa had a singles match against Mamo Sasaki, and Hayabusa just he told me that he just was tired. He was just, you know, and Arai wrote about it in his book too, that he had such regret that he felt like, you know, he was the reason, because the poor planning on, you know, the tour that in October of 2001, and Hayabusa just kind of, you know, just not all mentally there, and he just simply tripped on the rope and just fell on the back of his head. And he told a story that he saw his spirit came out of his body, he said, and it went up to the he saw his body over the ring, and then it came back down into his body. So he felt like he died there for a minute, He realized he knew he was paralyzed. He couldn't feel his body, and that actually had happened one time prior. Against Masato Tanaka, actually, where he landed on his head taking a suplex, and he couldn't feel his body there for a couple seconds, and then it just came back. But this time it just never came back. They stopped the match and took him to the hospital. It actually even got worse there, because when he got to the hospital, just sitting there at a hospital, not being able to move, he was unable to, he collected a lot of germs. And so he actually got germs in his heart, and they had to have an emergency surgery, where he had no memory of 2 months following his injury, because they had to put he had to be put under for so many drugs and do open heart surgery to remove all the drugs. And so, you know, he didn't even have, you know, this is the first 2 months, first three, you know, 2 to 3 months, and he hasn't even tried to learn how to walk or anything like that again, because he was fighting for his life at the time. And so he had the successful double, or the successful open heart surgery, and then he began just rehabilitation for 3 hours every day to learn how to stand again. And it took about, took him about eight months, and he learned to stand. And then as time went by, he was able to take steps. He actually showed up at Corrigan Hall on December 12, 2002 for WMF, and he came to the crowd and he took a couple steps.
Yeah.
And then as the years went by, you know, he would show up for shows. He there was a I believe it was a Nosawa, like a, you know, one of those Mill Masters.
Tokyo Gurren Tai show in 2013.
Oh,
I guess.
I believe it was 2011. There was a show. October 2011. He showed, and then he came to the ring for the first time, and he was able to, you know, he was able to walk into the ring. So that was a big deal at the time. Him being able to finally being able to walk, you know, in the ring, which he had always said he was, you know, was his goal.
And I think we have to quickly go back a little bit in time, because I believe that Fuyuki played a key role in him being able to walk again.
Well, yeah, Fuyuki was diagnosed with cancer in in April 2002. And so he actually was in the same hospital as Hayabusa, where he was getting treated for cancer. And Fuyuki went to Hayabusa's room. This was April 2002, so Hayabusa, at the time, you know, he had just recovered from the open heart surgery, you know, about 4 months earlier. And Fuyuki came to him, and he was like, you know, are you going to be able to walk? You know, like, what? How are you? And he goes, you know, I feel like I can do it. And he goes, well, listen, I don't have much time left. I'm going to die soon. But you still have a chance. You still have a chance to overcome this and come back and, you know, and walk and, you know, show the fans. I'm gonna pass away soon, but you can overcome this. And you know, Hayabusa tells that story, you know, that was a big time motivation for him, you know, to come back, to be able to walk. And you know, Hayabusa was able to walk on his own. I mean, that it kind of gets forgotten, but you know, it was easier with a cane, obviously, but he was able to take a few steps. He was, you know, he trained every day to be able to walk, and I mean, as time went by, he kept improving and kept improving, and his big goal was that in around 2018 or so, he wanted to be able to come to the ring in a Hayabusa costume and walk to the ring, you know, and be able to be introduced one last time.
Yep. And I put the video up. You can see him walk to the ring in August of 2015, actually, I think it was.
Yeah, they did a special that was for a TV show. And like I said, he had done it once before in 2011, but that was more for, you know, the wrestling fans and everything. Then for 2015, this was like a network special on handicaps, on mentally and physical handicapped people and what they're able to overcome. And it was, it was on a network channel. It was on NHK, which is, to American, you know, fans, it's like, you know, NBC, CBS, ABC, I don't know, the German, you know, main.
One of the big TV stations.
Yeah, one of the main broadcasts. So it was on one of those, and, you know, it was a very, you know, it showed him, you know, being able to walk to the ring, and it was a special, they booked Corrigan Hall. It wasn't an actual wrestling show or anything like that. They had all of Hayabusa's friends and family, his daughters, Ganosuke, Dragon Kid, Jinsei Shinzaki, Muto, everyone there to watch him be able to come to the ring. And it was technically a retirement ceremony, but Hayabusa stated it was more of a a beginning of a new chapter where, you know, he was still going to, you know, he wasn't technically retired, but it was kind of a, that was the end of that era, and now I'm focusing on this era of being able to walk, you know, fully and come back to the ring in the Hayabusa costume.
Right, and I think the newfound Chocento FMW version that's now around was founded, I believe, around the idea of Hayabusa walking through the ring again.
Yeah, one of the people that worked for the office in FMW, he, you know, decided with Onita and Battle Ranger to create, you know, kind of a new, you know, a new FMW, because the FMW name is still strong. You know, I mean, you know, you still hear about it. It's still, you know, it's kind of like ECW in America, where it's, there's still that nostalgia, there's still that popularity. You know, people remembering fondly of, you know, everything. And so, and Onita having these super firework matches with the exploding barbed wire bats, you know, it makes money for 01. And so, you know, they saw that as, hey, the nostalgia still, you know, it draws, especially with Onita. And so they decided to create a new FMW last year, and they, you know, they brought in Hayabusa to show up at every, you know, Corrigan Hall show or every Shinjuku Face show, to introduce the crowd, or you know, to kind of start the show off, you know, doing his speech and everything to get the crowd, you know, riled up for the beginning of the show. And so he was, you know, he actually, you know, was at Corrigan Hall on February 26th, just last week. He was there, you know, to start the show and everything. And but yeah, that was created by. I believe his name is Hideki Takahashi, but he wanted Hayabusa to come to the ring finally, you know, one day under the FMW name. He, you know, he always said that was the, you know, reason he created FMW, brought it back, was so that Hayabusa could have a home promotion to come back to, and that when he came to the ring, you know, he'd be coming back to the FMW name.
Yeah, and FMW is running right now. Hayabusa, unfortunately, as I said at the beginning of the show, died yesterday in the age of 47 years old. Very, very sudden. He, as I also said, he was working as a singer and as a performer right now. And the representative of the talent agency he's working for, the agency is, I guess, named Lighthouse Entertainment. He said that Hayabusa didn't have any chronic diseases nor any health issues. Well, of course, apart from his accident 15 years ago, he was healthy, and they were all so surprised and so shocked that he died yesterday. And I've seen so many people around the wrestling world say how much of an influence Hayabusa was on their career, or on basically brought them to be a wrestling fan. Brad, some final words to the life and death of Hayabusa.
Well, I don't know the full details, but what I'm under the assumption is that he fell. I think he fell, and
well, yeah. The Tokyo Sports article says they found him in his bed.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it may have been that he fell a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So
there might have been something, because it seems like it was a bleeding of the brain situation.
Right.
So, yeah, he might have fallen and just didn't think anything of it, or, you know, he might have just, you know, like I said, I just found out a couple hours ago. I'll hopefully, you know, be able to collect more information as the news comes out here in the next couple days or so. I was actually planning another trip to Japan for late June, and, you know, waiting to see, okay, hopefully, you know, Hayabusa will hold a concert or so. Because that was some of the highlights of my trips when I would go to, you know, going to Tokyo, getting to see Hayabusa, you know, him singing, and then, you know, getting the privilege of talking to him for hours. I went in 2012, and I mean, one of the, like, it was like a lifelong goal was to get to hang out with Hayabusa, and we watched Hayabusa matches. And just for, you know, a couple hours, and he's just telling me all these things about these matches. And, you know, I mean, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I went back again the next year and just talked to him like a friend. And one of the coolest things to me personally was I was at a bar, Naoshi Sano. He runs a bar, and Mr. Ganosuke was there. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm a big FMW fan. And he goes, yeah, I know. Hayabusa told me all about you.
That's amazing. No, I read, I think Masato Tanaka said it, that Hayabusa is one of the most incredible persons he ever met, and nobody... I really like the Bryan Danielson story. Nobody has a bad word to say about him.
No, he was so positive. I mean, he had stated that he was actually happy that this happened to him, the tragic accident, because it brought him a new he saw a new life. He knew life was valuable as a result. He, you know, to not take life as granted anymore. And you know, so he actually stated, you know, he was glad that it happened, because it just kind of put a whole new perspective on his life and a new focus and everything. And he hoped, you know, he was always positive. He always was, you know, in a good mood. You know, he stated, you know, he went through major depression while in the hospital right after it happened. But he kind of found a new, you know, a new look on life as a result. And he definitely, he was always friendly. Like I said, you know, just even me, you know, just some random guy coming from America to Japan just to see him, you know, just to go to his concerts. You know, he called me to, you know, sit with him and everything and talk with him because he liked speaking English. He liked, you know, practicing his English and everything. And like I said, we just talked and just for hours on in 2012 and in 2013, and that was just, you know, such an honor. And I told him when I was leaving in 2012 how much of an honor it was, how, you know, I have so much respect, and everybody has so much respect for him for what he was able to go through and still have a smile on his face and still think positive and still, you know, look up on everything, because, you know, I mean, it definitely was a tragedy what happened in 2001, and definitely, you know, I mean, it just losing all mobility, and you're, you know, just from going from being able to, you know, all these high flying moves and all these great matches to, you know, stuck and not being able to walk, really.
Yeah, it's really important to see this in a positive light. Really, as you said, he saw a new life, and I tweeted out earlier today, let's just remember Hayabusa for the message he left, that nothing is impossible. I tweeted out the video of him walking to the ring and grown men crying around the ring. Just an amazing, amazing scene there. Yeah, Brett, thanks very much for doing the show, really impromptu. Great insight into the life and the death of Hayabusa, I guess into the career as well. Just tell the people out there where they can find you.
I have a website. It's called Bahu's FMW World. It's www.bahufmw.com. I have a Hayabusa biography, very full detailed. I have a FMW history biography. Just everything that's FMW related, as far as the wrestlers, everything. I have, you know, I've been working on it for 17 years. It's my heart and soul, pretty much. So, you know, if you want to go there to find more about Hayabusa, that's the best website to go to.
Right, and also we can plug your Twitter. You can, I guess you open up your Twitter recently.
Yeah, it's at Bahu FMW. Like I said, BAHU FMW. I'm going to tweet anything, any news I find out as far as the update on what happened exactly. Any information I find, I will definitely be tweeting about it.
Well, thanks for doing the show again. Let the spirit of Hayabusa live on. Goodbye.
Yeah.